And now, Virgin Most Powerful Radio is pleased to present Hands-On Apologetics with renowned Catholic author and apologist, Gary Machuda.
Welcome, everyone. It's great to be back. Yes, you are listening to Hands-On Apologetics, Virgin Most Powerful's Apologetic Dojo. And I'm pleased to say that the Midwest Command Center is back up and running. It was a lot of fun being there in California. I'll talk about that in a little couple seconds. But in the meantime, we got a great show in store for you. What would make a follower of Dave Hunt and his anti-Catholic ministry become Catholic? Well, our guest right after the first break is going to be Stephen Piskorowski, a good friend of mine. He's going to come on and share with us exactly what made him return back to the Catholic Church. So that's going to be very cool to talk to Stephen. Of course, we're going to have our exercises as always. We're going to talk about the finding of the fallacy, which today is the appeal to fear. And also our Meet the Early Church Father, as always. This time, of course, it's not an individual, but the Council of Nicaea. The Council of Nicaea. And it's interesting every now and then. Early church fathers don't necessarily have to be an individual person. It could be a council and so on. And I want to say thank you so much for all you who, were part of the action on the West Coast trip. It was great. Finally got to meet in person Ruben and Eddie and Terry and Mary Danielle and, great people. Special thanks to Betty and Matthew Arnold. Had great time. And also Richard, who works the magic behind the mixer desk. It's great. It was just great to meet everybody. And like I said, they are cream of the crop, folks. Princes and princes among men. Princesses. Princesses and princes among men. Still got some jet lag, as you can tell. So thank you so much for all your hospitality. As you know, I was even invited in the squad car, Jesus 911, got to pinch hit for a spot, interviewed Terry Barber in his book, How to Evangelize Anyone. I've been meaning to have him on the show for months. We postponed it for the trip. So we finally got to do that, got to hang out with Betty and Matthew Arnold. Matthew Arnold's just incredible, incredible storehouse of knowledge. I'm going to have him back on the show because there's lots of things I think we could tap into and learn from him. Great stuff. And then last Thursday, before I get to Thursday, Wednesday night, how could I forget? We met at the historic Sacred Heart Chapel amidst a rainy and cold night. Nevertheless, we had lots of people show up. Some of you are on the forum. Thank you so much. It was great to finally meet you. Had a great time. Talk went well. And, it was just fun to be there. Yes. Hello, everybody. Oh, I didn't do my shout-out. Shout-out to those watching live stream on social media, Facebook, YouTube. Yes. Hi, Ricky. Hi, everybody. Good to see you. Good. And also, it's nice to put names, faces to names. Because I see the chat sometime and I wonder, I don't know how you look. Let's put it that way. I see the emojis, but who lurks behind the emojis? Don't know. So the talk went well. That was a lot of fun. Got to meet some of you. And then we traveled down to San Diego to Catholic Answers. I was on the show last Thursday, talked about the Deuterocanon. We also taped a segment of Catholic Answers Focus. Not sure when that's going to air. I think it probably already aired. Got to meet Cy, Darren, Trent, Jimmy, Todd, Christopher Check, John Sorensen, the rest of the gang. Some of you, I don't know if you're watching, but they've been on the show. So some I've met in person. Others I haven't. So it was kind of cool. In fact, we're going to have some of those people on the show later on in the month, next month. just a great time. California was so kind to adopt Michigan weather. It was cold, but warmer than here. And in fact, we had a big windstorm here. So instead of flying back Sunday night, I spent an extra day in California. And That's the reason why we had the best of the other day, just FYI. And right now I'm trying to dig my way out of the pile of work that has been piling up. So that brings me up to the point where if you want to join a conversation with Steven Zahn, give us a call, 888-526-2151. That's 888-526-2151. Or if you'd like to send via email any questions, give us an email at questions@handsonapologetics.com. And as you know, since the sensei has been away from the Midwest Command Center, the emails have piled up a little bit. So please be patient. I will get to your emails and maybe even answer some on the air. There was a couple of really good emails that I scanned over in the dojo mailbox, so to speak. But hey, without further ado, let's jump into our exercises, shall we? All right. Defining the fallacy today is the appeal to fear. And this fallacy occurs when a person attempts to create support for an idea by attempting to increase fear towards an alternative. Okay. Now, it's important to remember that this fallacy relies on using that increased fear as evidence for a proposition or against the alternative. So it's perfectly legitimate, I believe, to draw out the implications of something and to say that this could have consequences that would be fearful. But if all you're using is fear, then you're engaging in the appeal to fear. Okay, so that's one of those fallacies. I think once you're aware it's being used, it's rendered harmless. So just FYI, you know, ask yourself, okay, what is the evidence? And try to just ignore the appeal to fear, if you will. All right. Enough of that. Let's jump to the Meet the Early Church Father for today. And as I mentioned, the Early Church Father today is not an individual person, but a council. In fact, one of the most important councils in church history, the Council of Nicaea. This is the first ecumenical council of the church. It was convened in the city of Nicaea, which is in Bithynia in the year 325 AD. It was ordered by the Emperor Constantine, and his purpose was to put the end to the quarrels and dissensions that arose over the doctrine proposed by the heresiarch Arius. So it meant to stamp out Arianism. The number of bishops that attended Nicaea is given in different sources. Generally, the number 318 is one that historians are generally, they believe it's a good approximation. Vast majority of the fathers, by the way, were from the east. Only a few came from the west. Pope Sylvester was himself not present at the council, but he was represented by two priests from Rome, by Vitus, sometimes known as Victor, and Vincent. So those were the representatives of the Pope. We don't know who gave the opening address, however, we know that, or we have a good idea that it was Osius of Cordova who was the president of the council. His name is on the first of the signatories, and his name is followed immediately by the two papal legates of Victor or Vitus and Vincent. When it started, we don't know the exact dates. The council may have met before the emperor came, but he did eventually come, and it was solemnly opened in June 19th or 20th, and it closed August 25th. And for two or three months, the Great Council condemned Arianism, which basically believed that Jesus is not consubstantially God of the same nature as the Father. Okay, so the rule that was promulgated at Nicaea is that Jesus Christ is God and consubstantial, or the Greek is homoousios, with the Father. And that kind of dealt a death blow, at least the ultimate death blow, to Arianism per se. There was also, they ironed out problems concerning the date of Easter. They promulgated a letter to the Egyptian bishops to clear up another schism that was going on there. And they also had a number of canons. But Nicaea is probably best known for its formulation of a creed, the Nicene Creed, which in one way or another still survives today. And we still read it as Catholics around the world as a symbol of our faith. There were some disputes as to the canons, how many canons were passed. Generally believed that there were about 25 canons. And also, there was some discussion about the question of imposing clerical celibacy as a rule. But I don't believe, I don't believe that that was promulgated as a rule. I'm kind of skimming here. But anyway, the Council of Nicaea, contrary to the claims of some, I won't mention names, like Dan Brown, you know, they didn't vote on the divinity of Christ, and his divinity passed by a very slim minority. Rather, the whole council, you know, affirmed it. Let's see, anything else? Acts of the Council, three pieces remained, the Creed, 25 canons, and the Synodal Decree. And like I said, very, very important juncture in church history where the ancient faith was affirmed and Arianism was condemned. Unfortunately, even though it was condemned at Nicaea, you know, it's still stuck around. And that's one of those things about heresies, that all they do is they begin to make distinctions and try to go under different names. And it ultimately took quite a while to stamp out Arianism. So that's our early church father for today, the Council of Nicaea. And it just sounds strange saying that. The early church father for today is the Council of Nicaea. And, you know, coming up on the other side of the break, we're going to have a very interesting discussion with a longtime friend of mine, Stephen Piskrowski. He's going to join us, and he's going to talk about how, as a cradle Catholic, he left the church, actually supported anti-Catholic ministry, and found his way back, and now is a superb apologist in his own right. Stay tuned, everybody. You don't want to miss it.
This is Terry Barber inviting you, all the men, to a men's conference June 15th at the Sacred Heart Chapel. This is going to be a day where we're going to talk about true masculinity. You know, there's a problem in the Catholic Church today. We have very few men who love the Catholic faith. And I know a lot of the wives that I'm listening to right now are saying, I want my husband to be on fire for the faith. Send him to the men's conference. Your son, send him to the men's conference by going to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call 877-526-2151. That's June 15th. When your husband comes back from this conference or your son, they're going to have a different view about their Catholic faith because they're going to meet three men who love Jesus and his bride, the church, and are going to instill in them a love for Christ and his church, the Eucharist, Our Lady. Bring them to virginmostpowerfulradio.org. Sign up there or call 877-526-2151. Full sheen ahead.
It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. Please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
And welcome, everybody, back to Hands-On Apologetics, and where we discuss the faith, where the rubber of catechesis meets the road of everyday life. I know many of you may have loved ones who have left the church, and maybe you're feeling a little bit of despair, a little discouragement. Well, our next guest is, I think, going to give you some hope. His name is Stephen Piskorowski. He's a longtime friend of mine. And as Steve's going to be telling us, that he grew up in a Catholic home, fell away, and came back. So I don't want to, that's about the only biographical material I want to give, because I want him to tell a story. Stephen Piskorowski, welcome to Hands-On Apologetics.
Gary, for having me. It's long overdue, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, hey, I've been meaning to get you on the program, so I'm glad that our schedules finally coincided.
And, you know, it's very telling, because this Mother's Day of 2019 is actually the 20th anniversary of my return to the church. So maybe it was divinely inspired that we do it in this year.
Hey, wow. I didn't know that. All right.
Well, can you believe it's been 20? Yeah.
Yeah, boy, time flies, huh? Well, anyway.
It does.
Why don't we start from the beginning? Now, you grew up in a good Catholic home, right?
I did. In Sterling Heights, Michigan, one younger brother, and my parents were divorced at the age of 10. So that was kind of a very tough experience. But, you know, I was a nominal young Catholic man. I kind of reserved it for Sundays. I figured, well, Sunday is God's day, and I gave him his due on Sunday, and then I'll take it from here throughout the rest of the week. And I was kind of a nominal Catholic, and I gave intellectual assent to the things of God, but it really wasn't a personal thing for me until later in my early 20s.
Okay. Yeah, so, that seems like a pretty typical experience, too.
It really is. I didn't recognize that the Lord puts a void in all of our hearts that can only be filled by Him. In my late teen years and early 20s, I had tried to fill that void with, you know, going to bars, and sports gambling in particular became a real vice for me. It really brought me to a place where I was in financial ruin. And, you know,
oh, really?
Laying flat on your back, sometimes the only way to see is straight up. So I reached out to God, and, you know, I asked him to help me and to rescue me basically from financial ruin and some other problems I was having in my life. And, you know, I felt a sense of relief, you know, after I asked him to take over my life. And very shortly after that, of all things, I was watching a Hal Lindsey End Times video. And I remember watching that video and saying, well, you know, I'm a Catholic. I believe that Jesus Christ is coming again. And boy, I hope it's not tomorrow, because I really don't feel ready. I mean, I'm not ready for that.
Right.
And that really prompted me to go on a spiritual journey searching for God and what His will was in my life, and just taking God seriously and developing a deep love. I fell in love with Jesus for the first time is the way I would explain it.
Hmm.
And I decided to start going back to the Catholic Church, and I had a lot of questions. And, you know, Gary, when you and I have our four-hour marathon discussions over the phone as a couple of friends, you know, I always have a lot of questions. I get a ton of them back then. And I met with my parish priest, and I asked him a number of questions, and he unfortunately didn't give me any real concrete answers to a lot of things. And I kind of became disillusioned. And I thought, well, you know, I just want to go by what the Bible says. Well, let's just do that. So my mind, in a sense, Gary, defaulted to the sola scriptura position, which is the Bible is our sole rule of faith. Show me where it is in the Bible. My mind kind of just defaulted naturally to that. And we see that a lot today, I think, with Christians of all stripes. And for me, I didn't see purgatory in the Bible. I didn't see the word Pope in the Bible. I didn't see the word Eucharist in the Bible. I didn't see the word Mass in the Bible. So I figured, well, gee whiz, maybe all this time I've been involved in something that was a counterfeit. So I went on a spiritual journey.
It wasn't that you were discovering new things. It was more the Bible started reducing the things that you believed.
Really, that's a good way to put it. That's exactly right. It did. Huh. It became kind of constrictive, and when my mind defaulted to the Bible-only concept, which ironically enough, there's nowhere in the scriptures that teaches that the scriptures alone are our sole rule of faith. But
right.
at the time, I didn't know that.
Right.
You know, I didn't know that I was sitting on a branch that I was sawing off with my right hand while I was sitting on it.
Right.
You know?
Now, were you still in the church at this point, or were you already looking to leave the church?
It was really almost a simultaneous thing. You know, I think it was, looking back, it was within a couple of days that I made the decision to go to a local evangelical church, and I was just introduced to the love of the Holy Scriptures, you know, and I think the Lord allowed me to go away from the fullness and richness of the truth in the Catholic Church, so that I would eventually come back and be a stronger Catholic, although I didn't think that at the time. I got involved with a anti-Catholic ministry called the Berean Call, and the late Dave Hunt was the founder of that, and he was a great orator, and I was really impressed with his oratory skills, and he had actually done a number of debates
Yeah.
with Catholic theologians and apologists, and we were on the other side of one of those, as I remember.
Yeah. Well, before we get there, maybe you could explain to the audience, people who maybe aren't familiar with Dave Hunt or his ministry, like, what was it all about?
Well, the Berean Call is an anti-Catholic ministry, and their goal, although may very well be sincere, I don't know, but their goal is to get Catholics saved. They would take the position, and still do, that the Catholic Church is a cult, much like a number of the you know, cults that we're familiar with, Jehovah's Witness, Watchtower Bible and Tract Society, you know, the Mormon Church, Christian Science, Scientology, these types of things are cults. And the Berean Call would consider the Catholic Church one big, very, very, very old cult from which all people needed to exit and get saved, develop a real saving relationship with Jesus Christ. And I was attracted to that. I mean, I was on a search to love God, serve God. And, you know, kind of funny, thinking back, as I would read in the scriptures where it talked about the many different parts of the body, meaning different parts of the church, I kind of felt like I wanted to be a white blood cell. I wanted to be the one to kind of point out errors in doctrine and theology, and help people, you know, get introduced to the fullness of the truth, which is in the Holy Scriptures.
Now,
so
when you started getting familiar with Dave Hunt, were you already doing like countercult ministry in your evangelical church, or was that later?
No, I actually started that before. It might have been almost a simultaneous thing.
Okay.
I do remember that at my evangelical church, I had a friend of mine, John, and the two of us started a countercult ministry. So we would reason with people and train people on how to have conversations about the Bible, about Christianity, and specifically how to witness to Jehovah's Witnesses and Mormons and Christian Scientists and, you know, UFOlogists and New Age stuff. Now, while we weren't expert in any of these areas by no means, we loved God and we knew enough to be dangerous and have conversations, so we would train people on how to do that.
Right.
And it went quite well until the class actually one day challenged me, well, what about Catholics? And I thought, well, they need God too, so, you know, let me do an investigation and sharpen up my skills a little bit about Catholicism, and then maybe we can go out and start witnessing to Catholics, and we could all train together. So that's the kind of direction that went. But Dave was integral in that, and I actually met him one time when he flew into Michigan, and yeah, I was so smitten and so excited. I mean, I went and picked him up. We had dinner, and he was speaking at a Baptist church that night, and I got to meet him.
Yeah, for the audience that don't realize this, when I first started my ministry, which was Thy Faith, Inc., we were approached by some evangelical Protestants about having a debate between Dave Hunt and Carl Keating. And originally they approached Al Cresta because Al Cresta, I'm not sure, I don't think he converted to, yeah, he did. He converted back to Catholicism, but he was on a Protestant radio show So they wanted him to be the moderator of the debate, and they needed like a Catholic counterpart. So I was the Catholic counterpart. Our ministry was, and we co-sponsored this debate against Carl Keating and Dave Hunt, moderated by El Cresta. And that was a huge event, wasn't it?
Yeah, there was, you know, I would think there was well over 1,000 people there. I think it was it was in a large auditorium in I think it was Warren. And I was on the other side of that. I was with Dave's team. And I actually, you know, Dave had forgotten his Catholic catechism. And I said, oh, that's okay, Dave. I have my heretical Catholic catechism right on me, you know, and here, you can use mine. And so throughout the debate, Dave would quote from, you know, my Catholic catechism. And at one point he held it up, and Mark Spaulding and I were handling the electrical and, the audio for the debate. And boy, I'll tell you that looking back at that time, I just didn't see things clearly. You know, my mind wasn't open to it until later on.
Yeah, and so, you know, that debate, by the way, is available on YouTube. I just noticed it. And so, folks, if you go on YouTube and you're watching this debate between Hunt and Keating, just remember, when Hunt is waving his catechism, he's actually waving Stephen Piskorowski's catechism, which is ironic.
Yeah, unfortunately, that was me.
Yeah. And as I remember after the debate too, it was wonderful because we had book tables and stuff in the back, and I'm sure our Protestant counterparts did as well. And there was lots of great discussion. I remember people had banners, anti-Catholic banners, and it was fun. Now, did you actually engage in any discussions with Catholics after the debate?
I think I did. I think there was a few people that I just had some brief discussions with. I think I was working on selling the books, if I remember correctly. But, you know, ironically enough, the thing that really sticks with me now is, you know, when I listen to that debate now and I hear the wonderful arguments and the apologetics that that Carl Keating displayed, I wonder to myself, why didn't it occur to me back then that, you know, that kind of makes sense? I think it's just because my mind was closed off. I had made up my mind. Don't confuse me with the facts. I have my opinion. And, you know, that's where I was at that time.
Very good. Well, when we come back on the other side of the break, we're going to talk about the aftermath of that debate. Listen to Hands-On Apologetics. Stay tuned, everybody.
This is Terry Barber inviting you, all the men, to a men's conference June 15th at the Sacred Heart Chapel. This is going to be a day where we're going to talk about true masculinity. You know, there's a problem in the Catholic Church today. We have very few men who love the Catholic faith. And I know a lot of the wives that I'm listening to right now are saying, I want my husband to be on fire for the faith. Send him to the men's conference. Your son, send him to the men's conference by going to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call 877-526-2151. That's June 15th. When your husband comes back from this conference or your son, they're going to have a different view about their Catholic faith because they're going to meet three men who love Jesus and his bride, the church, and are going to instill in them a love for Christ and his church, the Eucharist, Our Lady. Bring them to virginmostpowerfulradio.org. Sign up there or call 877-526-2151. Full sheen ahead.
It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. Please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
This is Jesse Romero. You're listening to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda on Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
Yes, and we're back, and we're talking with Stephen Piskorowski, and we're to the point where Stephen was on the other side of the aisle of me as we were members of this great debate between Carl Keating and David Hunt here in Michigan. One of the first things my ministry did, and what amazes me, Stephen, is the aftermath of that debate. And before we get into your side of, you know, what unfolded for you, some of our listeners may not be familiar with this, but at the Carl Keating-Dave Hunt debate, there was a Pentecostal minister and some of his members of the church in the audience. And, you know, it's funny, Stephen, because he said, you know, it didn't make an impact on you. It didn't really make an impact on him, except Carl brought up the early church fathers. And that got him thinking, you know, who are these early Christians? And he started studying them and started transforming his church in light of what he's reading in the early church fathers. And he and half his congregation became Catholic. And you might be familiar with his name. His name is, Steve, do you want to do the great reveal?
Dr. or Deacon Alex Jones.
Alex Jones, yeah. Who then became a great apologist in his own right. God rest his soul.
Mm-hmm.
So Stephen, your followers, Dave Hunt, you just had this incredible debate against the folk, Carl Keating, and you're a supporter of his ministry. You know Dave Hunt's materials very well. What happened after the debate?
Well, you know, I started to get very involved in my evangelical church with you know, the Sunday school class and teaching people along with John on how to reason with Jehovah's Witnesses and Mormons and, you know, just reasoning about the Bible with atheists and this kind of thing. And we were challenged to do a class on Catholicism. So I started to read Catholic documents because I didn't want to read anti-Catholic documents anymore, because I wanted it to be very impactful. I wanted to prove the Catholic Church wrong from their own documents. And that's the first thing that I did. The second thing I did is I started to read the early church fathers, because, you know, in the segment that you had earlier on your show, you were talking about Arianism. And one of my heroes of the faith was Athanasius. And I just thought, well, you know, I want to read what Athanasius had to say about the early church and what St. Augustine had to say about the early church. And I was shocked. I was absolutely shocked to find out that these guys were Catholics. These were Catholic bishops. And I thought to myself, gee, these guys I look up to, and they're so wonderful, so holy, and so intelligent and sharp. How in the world could they have been Catholics? That's honestly what I thought. And then it started to occur to me, well, maybe I'm missing something.
Okay.
So over the course of about 6 months of reading the early church fathers and reading Catholic documents, I came to the conclusion that I had left the church that Christ established, although I did it, you know, with a sincerity of heart, but I had left the church and I needed to return. And it was Mother's Day, 1999, that I stood in front of my family. And I get a little choked up talking about this because it affects me so deeply, even these many years later. But I told them I'm coming back to the Catholic Church. Right. And it was a really, really touching moment for me then. It still is now when I think about it. Mm-hmm. And God brought me a great group of friends, Al Cresta, Steve Ray, Dave Armstrong, Gary Machuda, the whole crew. And it was a wonderful experience. And even thinking about it now, I get choked up, even though it's been so many years ago.
Yeah.
That was really something.
Our paths also crossed in another way, too, and I'd love for you to tell that story about that there was a directory of, I guess you would say, counter-cult ministries. And I know I had my organization there, and so did Dave Armstrong. He put his name there. Can you tell us a little bit about that end of the story?
Yeah, I jumped a little ahead, didn't I?
That's okay.
I had taken a short break from investigating the truths of the Catholic Church because I started to feel like I was getting so close to becoming Catholic. I kind of just shut the door on it for a while. I kind of got a little freaked out, and I just said, you know, I'm just going to give this a break for a while, and I am going to see if there's other people, you know, around the city that I lived in or close. Let's just get back to talking to Jehovah's Witnesses for a while, talking about Jehovah's Witness theology and Arianism. And so I found this counter-cult directory, and there was only really two ministries in the entire country at that time that had an outreach to Jehovah's Witnesses. And one was your ministry, but you were a little bit further away. The other one was Dave Armstrong's ministry. And I thought, well, I'll pick this one. So I call up Dave, and we got to talking. And I said, you know, what church do you go to? And he says, I think he said St. Michael or something like that. I'm like, oh, great, great. So you're Catholic? And he said, yeah. And I thought to myself immediately, Gary, I thought, oh, Lord, isn't that just like you to put me in contact with someone that's, you know, going to help us, you know, grow our faith. And this guy's really smart, and we're going to be able to witness to Jehovah's Witnesses. And along the way, since he's Catholic, he'll get saved, and maybe we'll have a wonderful ministry together. And boy, Lord, you sure are full of surprises.
Yeah.
And what happened, unbeknownst to me, is, you know, when I got there, I met Dave at his home for the first time. And after about 5 minutes talking about Jehovah's Witness theology, that was out the window. And we were dialoguing about Catholicism and Protestantism, and Bible verses were flying and apologetics were flying. And we really had a great time, and we listened to each other, though.
Yeah.
And that's the wonderful thing about it. Dave listened to me, and then he did something that was really shocking to me, and this is really what got me. He repeated back to me the position that I had espoused to him that I held. He did this so he would be expressing to me, Stephen, is this what you're saying? And then I would say yes. And then he would lovingly dismantle my argument and replace it with something that makes more sense. And see, that got me. That really got me, because here's a guy who's being honest and he's listening to me and we're having a candid conversation. And whenever I see Dave, I give him a big hug and I tell him, thank you, brother, for being a fine-tuned tool in the hand of God to bring me back to the church.
Yeah, that's one of we've had Dave on the show a couple of times. One of the beautiful things about his approach is he really does respect other people's positions, and he's willing to listen and try to understand it. And like you said, that's kind of disarming, because it invites you to try to understand his position as well. Is that correct?
Yeah, and actually some of the arguments that I would give to him that I thought were stellar or were real proof texts for my anti-Catholic position, he would actually give me better ones and say, well, I would go further and quote you, you know, two or three other passages. And I remember myself saying, man, you're really helping me with my anti-Catholic theology here. But you know, something's not right, you know? And he would help to bolster my position. And then he would lovingly tear down his arguments that he offered to me, and then he'd get to mine. By the time he got to mine, it was like, you know, this is silly. And that really moved me. It really did. Because here's a guy who's honest, and here's another thing. This was really, really important to me. They created an atmosphere, his wife Judy, created an atmosphere that they looked forward to me coming every Thursday for 3 hours. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a burden. They had me come over. You know, there was pop and chips and dip and all different kind of things. And it was like a little mini celebration. Hmm. And I just found that so wonderful, how they took time out of their lives to spend with me. And it was just wonderful. And Judy played just as much in a role as my reversion as Dave did. And the Lord knew exactly what I needed. He knew exactly what I needed.
Now, so this wasn't a one-time event then. This took course over about how long?
Yeah, we met every Thursday for about 3 hours, and it lasted about 2 months.
Oh, okay.
And the one real kicker that really got to me was when we started to talk about the canon of Scripture and how the Bible actually became a book. Mm-hmm. And who were the people that had the authority to recognize which books would constitute the Bible and which ones would not? And for me, that was an indication that there truly is an authority outside the text of Scripture. Because without an outside authority, outside the Scripture, how do you get the Scriptures?
Yeah.
It didn't just fall down out of heaven. There's no golden table of contents. And Dave really challenged me with that and said, well, buddy, just think about that. Because, I'm open to whatever you can come up with. Mm-hmm. And, Gary, I can tell you, I can remember laying back in bed, looking at the ceiling, and this really ate away at me. Mm. How could I trust the Scriptures as being theonoustos, the written Word of God, and yet I reject the authority of the men who it turns out to be Catholic bishops in the 4th century who recognized which books would constitute the Bible? So it was really difficult for me to reconcile that. And that was the beginning of me saying to the Lord, Lord, I trust you. I love you. I will join any church you want. And I think, Gary, that's the first time that I really opened up my heart and said, I surrender. I will join any church you want me to. Just lead me there. And it turned out to be the one Holy Catholic and Apostolic Catholic Church where I had already been.
Right. Well, hey, on the other side of the break, I want to find out what happens afterwards with your ministry and so on. Listen to Hands on Apologetics. Stay tuned, everybody.
This is Terry Barber inviting you, all the men, to a men's conference June 15th at the Sacred Heart Chapel. This is going to be a day where we're going to talk about true masculinity. You know, there's a problem in the Catholic Church today. We have very few men who love the Catholic faith. And I know a lot of the wives that I'm listening to right now are saying, I want my husband to be on fire for the faith. Send him to the men's conference. Your son, send him to the men's conference by going to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call 877-526-2151. That's June 15th. When your husband comes back from this conference or your son, they're going to have a different view about their Catholic faith because they're going to meet three men who love Jesus and his bride, the church, and are going to instill in them a love for Christ and his church, the Eucharist, Our Lady. Bring them to virginmostpowerfulradio.org. Sign up there or call 877-526-2151. Full sheen ahead.
It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. Please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Matsuda. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
And welcome back, everybody. We're talking with our guest sensei, I should say, Stephen Piskorowski, who is explaining his journey back to the faith. And you were just talking about how you were in this counter-cult ministry in evangelical church, and you met the great Dave Armstrong, and how Dave was, you know, he really considered what you had to say in your arguments and then lovingly dismantle it. And right when we got to the break, you were saying how, you know, you were open to, once you realize sola scriptura, the Bible alone doesn't fly, coming back to the church. Now, Stephen, now coming back to, you know, your evangelical church after making that decision, I'm sure they must have been at least a little confused about how Stephen, who's training us to evangelize Catholics, is actually warming up to Catholicism.
Yeah, the first person that wanted to talk with me was my pastor.
Okay.
Pastor James Beal. Mm-hmm. And we sat down, and, you know, here's a young fellow, you know, maybe 28, 29 years old, and I sat down with Pastor Beal, and I was a little intimidated because there's all these doctorate degrees and all these master's degrees and all these honorary things behind his desk. And he said, "Stephen, what's going on with you?" So we had the conversation, and you know, we had a wonderful discussion. And it turns out that he really didn't know very much about the Catholic Church at all, or nor about church history. And there's a number of Bible verses that he was unaware of that he had never seen before.
Really?
And we had a great exchange, and he wished me well. And I says, you know, I'm right in the middle of the Sunday school class with my friend John, and John and I were very close. And Pastor Beal said, "Well, you know, if you don't start preaching the Catholic stuff, you can finish the class." Okay. So John was very concerned about me because, you know, "Stephen, what are you doing?"
Right.
So I thought for the best thing to do for the class is just for me to help assist John like we always did in putting the program together and the material together, but I wouldn't go myself. He would just do it.
Right. Now John was, he's a former Catholic as well, right?
He is, yeah.
Okay.
Right, he was. He had this, much like the same story as me, left the Catholic Church as a younger person, and then it's almost, we had the same story, which is, I guess, why we got along so well. And we both love apologetics. We both love theology. And he called me one day. By the way, I had been sending him weekly. I would mail him. You know, back then we didn't have the internet and all that stuff like we do now. But I would make copies of books and statements from saints and, you know, even Protestant ministers. And I would make copies of them, and I'd highlight these statements, and I'd mail them to him and not say anything. And I knew he would read them. You know, but I wanted, my hope is to express to John, you know, the truths of the Catholic faith and to consider what I had rediscovered. Mm-hmm. Well, time went on, and it turns out that he called me one day and he says, "Hey, let's forget about the Catholic stuff for a second. I got a couple Jehovah's Witnesses coming over. Let's just sit down with them and let's talk." I said, "Okay." So I went over to his apartment, and I remember before I walked in, I was supposed to be there at 1 o'clock because they were going to meet us at 1:15 at his apartment. I got there about 12:45, and I thought to myself, you know, since we're going to be talking to the Jehovah's Witnesses and we're going to be talking about the doctrine of the Holy Trinity, I happened to recognize that I remember I had a St. Patrick chaplet in my, you know, in my council here. And I thought, well, I'm just going to ask St. Patrick to pray for this meeting, that we would have a fruitful meeting and that the truths of the Trinity would be apparent to these Jehovah's Witnesses. So I remember praying the chaplet, and then I asked St. Patrick, please help us. Went up there. We had a wonderful discussion. It was a wonderful, fruitful discussion. And toward the very end, you got to understand, I was sitting in the middle. The two Jehovah's Witnesses were on my left, and John was on my right. And we had a great conversation, and I remember asking them toward the end, you know, why do you suppose God waited so long to establish the Watchtower Bible and Tract Society if it's the true church? Why do you suppose he waited so long? Because the Watchtower wasn't established until the 1800s, 1800 years after Jesus walked the dusty roads of Galilee. And they really didn't have an answer for that. And then I thought to myself, you know, my head slowly turned and I looked to my right and I looked at John and I said, do you know why the Lord waited so long to establish the Watchtower Bible and Tract Society, if that's the true church, John? And the underpinning of the question, I could see John's mind was thinking, well, we know that the Watchtower is not the true church, but, you know, Luther started Protestantism in the 16th century, and the underlying question was, you could cut the irony in the room with a knife. I knew what John was thinking. Well, how is it that God waited till the 16th century to establish the true church? Because after all, there was no such thing as Christianity other than Catholicism up through the 16th century. Right. And the next thing we talked about was how the Bible became a book. And the same thing happened. I asked the Jehovah's Witnesses, you know, well, why do you trust the authority of Catholic bishops at the councils in the late 4th century to recognize which books were inspired and which books were not? Mm-hmm. And they didn't have an answer to that. And I looked over to John a second time and I said, do you? And he kind of looked at me, and it's almost like his mind was open at that time to these things. And it was a wonderful meeting, and I think that was the beginning for John, who ultimately did return to the Catholic Church. And it was a wonderful experience. It's just amazing how the intercessory prayer of the saints, along with the invitation of the Holy Spirit, can do wonders in people's lives.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, those are two takeaway points, I think. Number one, prayer, you know, beforehand, that God will direct, you know, because he will. You know, he'll plant the right seeds, even if you don't know you're planting the right seeds. But, you know, Stephen, what you did is actually a technique that works very well with cult members. I don't know if you consciously knew this, but, you know, if you ask a cult member, are you a member of a cult? They will say, no, absolutely not, we're not. But if you say, is that group a cult? They'll say, yeah, that's definitely wrong. And then what you do is you start comparing it. Mm-hmm. You know, they believe X. You know, do you believe X? They believe Y. Do you believe Y? And many times that's able to, you know, you're able to kind of bypass that, like mind control that goes on. And get them to realize, wow, you know, I'm in a group that's wrong. But now, not to say that John was in the cult, but it was kind of like that parallel digging where, you know, you would mention something to the Jehovah's Witness and then turn and say, do you?
And it was a very non-intrusive, honest question.
Yeah.
And I think our Jehovah's Witness friends were kind of taken back by it too, and maybe you know, maybe it was the planting of a seed or the watering of another seed. But you know, Gary, you mentioned something very interesting, and that was prayer. I just want to remind anybody who's listening to this podcast, I was more anti-Catholic than most anti-Catholics, and my mother, my great aunt, and my grandmother never ever had an intellectual joust with me. They never played Bible ping pong with me. They didn't talk about these things. They just listened to me, and they prayed, and they prayed, and they prayed. And honestly, it's the Lord who brings the person into your life through the intercessory prayer, oftentimes, of people close to you to use as a fine-tuned tool in his hand to lovingly bring the person to where they need to be. It's not necessarily your mom and dad who are going to quote Bible verses, and I'm just going to drop to my knees and say, well, can I have a rosary, and I'm ready to come back to the Catholic Church.
Right.
It's their the prayers of the parents and grandparents is so powerful. As a matter of fact, I think about St. Monica, who for years was praying for St. Augustine. And I'm sure there was, I could just imagine St. Monica trying to reason with St. Augustine, and with him being the order that he was, you know, somehow diffuse her arguments or her reasoning. And ultimately she went to St. Ambrose and says, you know, what do I do about my son? You know, what can I do to bring him back to the church? And I've been talking to him. I've been reasoning with him. And St. Ambrose gave her some great advice. He said, maybe you should start talking less to St. Augustine or to Augustine about God and start talking more to God about Augustine. Mm. And that is just a beautiful, beautiful example of how God ultimately led St. Augustine to St. Ambrose.
Yeah.
And he was the one that God would use to reason with him, to bring him back to the Catholic Church.
Absolutely. And just to tie up the story, what happened to John?
John, later on down the line, I think about 6 months later, was received back into the Catholic Church.
Yeah.
Still practices today, and still a good friend of mine. Boy, I'll tell you, that was a real, I can remember some of the people in class making some comments. One of them was, if you play around in the devil's backyard too long, this is what happens. You get confused and become Catholic. People had said things like that. People had said that a couple people said were, you know, false teachers. But that's okay. I pray for those people, and I know that maybe what happened with my story would maybe impress on them later on in life or what have you. I mean, that's up to God, but it was a very moving experience for me, and I'm just happy to be back in the church and in love with Jesus and the Holy Scriptures and the Mass and the Eucharist. And I rediscovered Christ in a way that I had never known before.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Well, Stephen, thank you so much for coming on the program. And by the way, folks, Stephen's instrumental in the Midwest Catholic Apologetics Conference, an annual conference at Cyril Methodius here in Michigan. Just look up St. Cyril Methodius and website, and you can find out more information. Stephen, thank you for coming on the show.
Gary, thank you for having me.
All right. Stephen Piskorowski, ladies and gentlemen. Wow, it's already time to turn off the dojo lights, shut down the Midwest Command Center. We got Terry and Jesse show coming up. High impact Catholic talk with the dynamic duo. Catholicism. Terry and Jesse. And by the way, I appreciate everybody coming out last Wednesday to Sacred Chapel. And thank you so much, everybody, and Terry and the rest of the gang at Virgin Most Powerful Radio for making it great. God bless everyone.
In the 1990s, I lived and worked in Hollywood. But when my wife Betty's mom took ill, we relocated to Orange County. And it was during this time in our lives that I converted to Catholicism. Once my eyes were opened to the truth, I couldn't learn enough about the faith. But I had less free time than ever, especially with a long commute. That's when I discovered the real value of Catholic audio. Listening to cassette tapes transformed my daily commute into a miniature retreat. And that's the beauty of Virgin Most Powerful Radio today. Since the podcasts are archived, you can listen anytime on our smartphone app. I know how listening to Catholic audio can bring you closer to Christ and His Church. So I encourage you to visit the App Store or go to vmpr.org and download the app today. It just might change your life. I'm Matthew Arnold for Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
Virgin Most Powerful Radio, sharing the gospel with clarity and charity.